Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If you've got a secret, who do you tell? For thousands of people today, it's the Internet. Sites like PostSecret and BuffSecret and GroupHug are proliferating. Secret Tweet, TrueConfessions.com. Tons of submissions, millions of hits, anonymous admissions of vulnerability, fear, loneliness, secret lovers, secret failures. This hour on Point, we're looking at the world of Internet confession and sharing secrets online. We will hear in this hour from a media watcher and clinical psychologist and from the moderator of the hugely popular site FMyLife.com. But first, joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Frank Warren, founder and curator of PostSecret, the most famous of online confessionals. Frank started PostSecret as an art project in 2004, handed out 3,000 blank postcards inviting strangers to mail in their secrets. Since then, he's received nearly 500,000 postcards with anonymous confessions. He posts a weekly selection at postsecret.com, which gets over 1 million viewers a month. He's also compiled 4 best-selling PostSecret books. His 5th out this fall is PostSecret, Confessions on Life, Death, and God. Frank Warren, it's great to have you.
Hi, Tom. It's great to talk to you.
So what were you up to, and what do you make of what this has turned into? Did you ever imagine it would be such a hugely popular use of the Internet, Frank?
No. About 5 years ago at an arts festival called Artomatic, I started PostSecret. And about a month after I passed out the postcards, I thought that the project would end. But the idea of PostSecret somehow spread virally around the world, and people began to buy their own postcards, make their own postcards. And to this day, 5 years later, I still receive about 1,000 postcards every week from all around the world with these extraordinary secrets.
Some are funny, some are deeply moving, and everything in between. I mean, I'm looking at a sample from the first collection you put out. Here's one written on a Starbucks a cup sleeve. It says, "I give decaf to customers who are rude to me." Okay. I mean, funny. Here's one from one of your postcards. "He wasn't cheating on you, but since you chose to blame me anyway, he will be." Interesting. Mm. A whole drama up there. And then, "Honestly, I'm glad your uncle died because he molested me that time in the 7th grade that I spent the night at your house. He told me that I liked it. I hope he likes it in his grave." Wow. I mean, you've got the whole span here, sex, death, and Starbucks. It's just about everything that showed up sooner or later in these confessions, Frank.
I think you're right. I think these postcards sometimes are like little private windows right into a person's soul. And you read the secret, but you get pulled in deeper to this very human story, a story about frailty, a story about heroism, humor, absolution. And I think in the end, my hope is that it makes us feel a little bit closer. It increases empathy for everyone.
Not everybody comes across great here. I mean, some you have sympathy. A series of simple, "I hated my childhood," one says. Here's one that says, "I wish I were a popular idiot instead of a lonely genius." And then, I mean, just the whole range, you know, all over the place. You've got, "I'm a dot-com millionaire, but I told my family I missed the bubble." Somebody hiding their fortune there. Here's one, plenty of sex in these. One says, "I pulled a muscle in my neck while masturbating. I told my husband it was from moving furniture." you've got absolutely the whole range. But why do you think people come to you on a postcard for something they know is very likely, if it's interesting, to end up online? Why that?
Well, Tom, I like that selection of secrets that you read. It really does show the full human spectrum of emotion that I get to see from my mailbox every day. And as you were reading those, you know, it makes you wonder, who could you tell some of those secrets to? It'd be difficult to share that with a friend or even a spouse, perhaps.
But with a friend? There's a question. With a friend? I mean, why not with a friend? Isn't that what friends... I mean, isn't that sort of, girl talk or free guy talk? Isn't that what a friend should be for?
Well, I think keeping secrets is something that's very human, and I think we all keep a lot of secrets, and it's probably healthiest for us to share most of them. But I think there are some that are very difficult for us to let go. And And I believe there are two kinds of secrets, the secrets that we keep from other people and the ones that we hide from ourselves. And one of my hopes for Post-Secret is that by bringing that secret out of yourself that you might be struggling with at a very deep level and putting it on a postcard and releasing it to someone in a safe way, hopefully that's a first step that allows you to later on share it with a friend or a spouse or a counselor.
There's so many of these sites now, it's amazing. I mean, people even tweeting. Here's from secrettweet.com. Everybody's picked up on your pioneering work here, Frank, but they're tweeting, "My company thinks I'm an economist. I'm not. I'm a college dropout, and I make a lot of money as a supposed grad." Here's one, "I really like cutting myself. My hubby thinks I stopped doing it, but I haven't. I've been doing it most of my life." And then the woman I'm a chef for was being mean. "I used a cup of bacon grease instead of 2 tablespoons of olive oil. I smiled when she gobbled it up." These are with the constrictions of tweeting, but still powerful stories. Here's another one in your realm. Here's a site called buffsecret.com. I guess it's out of Boulder, Colorado, where the University of Colorado mascot is the buffalo. And what do you make of this? It says, I mean, this is so tough. I was blown away. It says, "We have nothing except for sex. You don't get that. I stay because I don't know how to leave and I don't want to hurt you. But wherever we go, I look around the room and find a man that I'll think about the whole time we're sleeping together. So really, we don't even have sex left because it's not you I'm thinking of. I'm using your body and wishing it were anyone else." Wow. That is tough.
What a confession. And some of the deepest secrets, I think, read as though they're an emotional knot. And you're trying to understand feelings that you have in ways that maybe don't make sense to you. And by expressing it, getting it out there on a card or on Twitter, there's a real popular Post-Secret Twitter feed as well. Mm-hmm. I think these new forms of media, I think they allow us in certain ways to discover ourselves in different ways. And I think through that, maybe more self-acceptance. And maybe as we read other people's secrets too, we feel less alone with our own. And again, hopefully that helps us to find the confidence to share them with others after we first share them with ourselves.
But I wonder, when I read that last one, I just wonder if it's mean. You know, just mean that there's some hope that this person will read that, I don't know, not as resolution, but as punishment. We have nothing except for sex, and we don't really even have that. We've got callers, Frank, that I'd like to bring in, and we want to hear so much more from you as well. Meg in Boston, you're on the air with Frank Warren, founder, curator of Post-Secret.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
One thing I just wanted to say is that what he has done has just been so amazing for me, because whether or not we have the same quirks or issues that you see people that send into Post-Secret have, it makes you feel like it's okay to have your own quirks and your own, you know, little neuroses or whatnot, and that I just find so much comfort in always having his books to go to. And it's just been so amazing what he's done.
So you read the books. And do you read online as well, Megan?
I do read online, but I more so read the books. And I'll read them over and over and find new things every time I read them, no matter how many times I've read them.
Is it really to feel better about your own quirks? Is it about entertainment? Is it about seeing the amazing span of human thoughts and circumstances?
Well, I think it's kind of all of the above. I think that if I'm feeling down, I can go there and say, you know what, I'm not the only one who doesn't necessarily feel normal, because what is normal anyway? And that some of them are very funny or very heart-wrenching, and it kind of allows you to explore all those emotions from the entertainment standpoint as well.
Meg, thanks very much. Frank Warren, you know, people feeling better about their own quirks, as Meg calls them, because you've put so many out there so powerfully.
Well, I think there's a strong reaction to the secrets on postsecret.com every Sunday. And what I see is this amazing community building up around Post-Secret. I post the secrets, but then for the next week, I'm receiving these extraordinary emails. And I posted up a very moving secret on Sunday, and I recently received a message that read, "After the election, I started praying every day for Barack Obama's safety. I asked God to bless Obama, and then I prayed for my family. I thought, who's more important than Obama? Then I got cancer. I have 2 daughters who already lost their father. Still, I'm glad Obama is safe." And I posted that response on the website. And after that, I got many, many more emails from people, all in support of this person. And I posted another one right underneath that one that read, "Now I pray for your safety." And I think the idea of When people can find the courage to express these very vulnerable secrets, it allows other people to find that same courage and maybe look inside and struggle with some of the parts of themselves that they might be hiding from. And I hope it's in a positive way.
In a way, when you look at it that way, you're creating a kind of online emotional webbing, a kind of global emotional webbing here.
I'm so optimistic about the web in general, and I feel like these new tools of communication like Twitter, blogs, social media, they allow us to have new kinds of conversations, conversations that have never been possible before, and conversations where we can hear unheard voices and share untold stories that hopefully in the end helps us understand that even though everyone's secret is individualistic like a fingerprint, there's this deeper unity that connects us all that sometimes we forget about in our everyday lives.
We'll hear later in this hour from the site moderator for F My Life. We have with us from Washington, Frank Warren. He's the founder and curator of Post Secret. Millions have read the postings of the secrets he's received at postsecret.com. He joins us from Washington. We're joined as well now in the studio by Sherry Turkle, professor of the social studies of science and technology at MIT. She directs the Initiative on Technology and Self. She's a licensed clinical psychologist. Her most recent book out last month is Simulation and Its Discontents. Sherry Turkle, welcome back to One Point. Great to have you.
A pleasure.
So here you are. You watch media like crazy. You're a clinical psychologist. This is a giant phenom on the web. Here's Frank Warren, who in many ways kicked it off. What do you think about what's going on with online confession and sharing of deep secrets?
I think it's a very complex story. One of the most positive things, and I think it comes across as Frank speaks, is that when people share their secrets, just as when they share the storylines that they build for the simulated characters on The Sims, or just as they share the stories of the avatars they create on Second Life, it's a kind of Rorschach. It's a kind of self-expression. It's a way to begin a process of self-expression and self-reflection. I think that, I guess, from talking to people post their posting in my research, I think the question is what happens next. And there, the paths diverge very dramatically. For some people, this really is a starting point for a process of self-reflection and coming to know oneself better. For others, it can be an emboldening to go out and then share the secret, not just virtually, but physically, you know, with the real people in their life, without that world being ready for it and without having the communities they need to support themselves there. So I think for me, the delicate interplay is the kind of what next, what happens after people post.
Is it a first step or a step toward a wider sharing, a real human flesh and blood interaction? Are you confident that it is?
It sometimes is, but sometimes to very negative results, because when people share these secrets that you've been talking about in real life, they're not always in a safe space to do it. And the repercussions, dramatic repercussions in their family life when they share some of these secrets emboldened by what they've done on these virtual sites can be devastating to people.
What about the possibility? Oh, you think people will recognize them and even though it's anonymous?
Or? No, people share a secret on Post Secret. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of people give them support.
Right.
And then they decide,
okay, I can share this.
Yes. And they have no support in the real to actually be working with their families, their friends, their children when they are
stepping off a cliff.
Yes.
Frank Warren, have you seen that dynamic, Frank? A warm reception in Post Secret, but people who then take it into the real world and hit a wall?
As Sherry was speaking, I could think of one secret in particular I posted on the website. It came from a young woman and it read, I worked all my life to get into an Ivy League school, and now that I'm here, I hate it. And I posted it on the website, and a few days later, she emailed me in a panic saying, my friends and family have recognized my handwriting. Please remove my secret. And I did immediately, but I emailed her back, too, and I said that even though you feel this pressure in your life right now, please send me another message a year from now, because maybe this tension that you're feeling by exposing this secret will push you or motivate you to find a place on campus that's a better fit for you, or relocate to a school that you like better. And I think that's true for all of us, that when we share a real secret, it's not an easy process. It can bring stress and tension into our life in the short term. But I think in the long term, it might be the healthiest thing we can do.
Confessing that you hate a particular school or an Ivy League college is hardly the worst thing a person could possibly confess, Sherry.
Right. I was actually thinking more of people talking about accusations of abuse, accusations of rape, when they feel then they're ready to bring that into their real families. They don't have the social support that they need to do that. But, you know, Frank's site is unusual in many ways. I mean, Frank is unusual. I mean, here you have a compassionate, humane person who's vetting the secrets he receives. He's vetting the responses to them. Many sites don't have that presence, that human presence that makes such a difference. The transference in this site really is to Frank. The person you're telling the secret to really is to Frank. Many of these sites are kind of anonymous, where the responses to these confessions are cruel. I'm holding a site that I've recently been looking at, Confessions for You, and you know, someone admits that they are in a relationship that's just a kind of sex-only relationship, and she feels very ambivalent about it. She's very torn, and she gets responses, you slut, you should kill yourself. You're the one. And, you know, what of that? When I interview people who've shared secrets like that and who are very vulnerable and receive this vitriol, the motivations of the people who who go on these sites to comment on secrets are not always in the spirit of a supportive
nurturing. It can be slash and burn out there.
It can be very slash and burn out there. These people are very vulnerable. So I think that it's important to, on the one hand, distinguish among different sites and treat this perhaps more, you know, be more respectful of the power of this medium to give people troubles as well as to begin them on a process of development.
Frank Warren, you vet the secrets that go up. Do you also vet the responses? Do you cut out the cruel and slashing responses or not, Frank?
I do. I think that one of the reasons that so many strangers who I've never met have trusted me with their secrets, almost 500,000, is because online I try and create this safe, non-judgmental place where people can share the things that they sometimes don't feel comfortable about talking about in their everyday lives.
Let's go to Julie in Milton, Massachusetts. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Frank.
Hey.
I try to live my life by the philosophy that I'm only as sick as my secrets, and that things that, you know, fester in my mind can take on kind of a bigger life than they need to. So I really think that Frank is doing a service because, you know, as the counselor, the psychologist touched on, people need a safe place. I have friends, really close, wonderful friends that I can tell my secrets to, but not everyone has that. And I think the site provides people with a place to, you know, sort of start to leak it out, and hopefully because of the, you know, really caring response that they get from Frank and the community, that they will feel like they're then able to perhaps take it to a counselor or to a friend or to a family member.
Frank, it sounds like that's the idea. That's what you're hoping for. Of course, the Internet is as big as Post Secret is, and it's huge. The Internet is bigger than that. Not every place is so welcoming or nurturing. You can get smacked around out there.
You can. Right now, the Internet is like the wild, wild west, and I can post any kind of secret on the web, and that's both good and bad. I think of Post Secret more as an art project than a source for therapy or maybe personal understanding. But I have heard stories of how people have found it to be an important step on their journey. And I have heard from psychologists also who keep Post Secret books in their waiting room, and people feel comfortable seeing other people's secrets before they go in and talk about their own.
I'm looking here again, so many of these out there, buffsecret.com. Here's one that says, I will be so relieved to go, remember this is for a college audience, I'll be so relieved to go home to my own bathroom so that I won't have to worry about people walking into the dorm bathrooms while I'm throwing up. Apparently someone with bulimia And then there's responses here, you know, OMG, oh my gosh, same. People always walk in on me, and I swear I gained like 10 pounds because people were always in there. Now that I'm home, it's way easier. There's somebody in the same boat. Someone else saying, okay, sorry, but this is just straight up funny. Others coming on to say, you know, be careful. This is not a laughing matter. You could hurt yourself. Jim, Hartford, Connecticut. You're on the air, Jim.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Frank. I have two teenage daughters who go to the site every week, faithfully, and I'm kind of conflicted about it. It has given us an entree to discuss some of the difficult topics that are posted there. But at the same time, for them and their friends, it seems to be mostly an entertainment site. And I'm concerned with the larger issue in society with shows like Dr. Phil, where therapy or psychiatric issues become a spectacle, become entertainment. And I'm wondering what your guests thought of that.
Sherry, let me go first to you in a moment, Frank. But Sherry Turkle, what do you say?
I think this caller has put his finger on the problem. How fortunate that his daughters can both experience this in their own way as kind of entertainment, but also talk to their parents about it. And how fortunate that they have another place to metabolize what they're reading, to make sense of what they're reading, to learn to be compassionate and to think through what they're reading.
You're a clinical psychologist. Are you so
yes.
sure it will go that way? He says, well, maybe it's just entertainment and display. It could turn into a kind of, oh, my God, I've seen everything, callousness.
Yes, but the cure for that callousness is that they are discussing it over the dining room table with their parent. He's there to mediate that. And that's what's essential, and that's what's so different, I think, about Frank's site. When I said the transference is to Frank, I really meant it. What cures is not venting. What cures is a sense of relationship with a person, with a community, in this case, of your caller, with a parent. That's the therapeutic part of this. The therapy is not just venting. I kind of challenge that as the thing that can give you a sense that, yes, there are people out there, yes, I'm not alone, but the real work of self-reflection happens because you feel in relationship to people.
Frank, you say you see it primarily as an art project. Art, of course, that's a big word, all kinds of deep implications there. But you hear the father calling from Hartford who says, well, he's worried that it's, yes, but maybe display, entertainment. And entertainment, being entertained by people's deepest, often deepest troubles and problems.
Yeah, I'm a father too, and I think Jim puts his finger on an important point. I see something happening in our culture right now, almost a tectonic shift. I think that young people are becoming more comfortable and confident talking about things in new ways online and in other places that their parents would never feel comfortable talking about. And I think that's exposing opportunities, but also problems as well. And I think at Post Secret, people might come to the website initially out of curiosity or voyeurism, but I think the reason so many people come back again and again, and the site has had almost a quarter of a billion hits, is because after 1 week or 2 weeks, you eventually come across a secret that came from a stranger that might articulate something very close to home, something that you see in a loved one or something that you've been struggling with yourself. And I think once that happens, it really puts you on a different journey and you have a different relationship with these very earnest, authentic secrets that strangers are courageous enough to share with others.
Here's one. Sometimes, but really most of the time, I hate being married. I miss the independence, the chase, the thrill and awkwardness of sexual tension, the obsession, the distraction. Some of us just aren't meant to be tied down. Brian in Marblehead, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Okay.
I kind of feel like I'm jumping on with sort of the direction the rest of the callers are taking this, and I've been thinking a lot lately about shame, and I think at the core of that is often secrets. And when I read about how people move beyond shame, it seems through close interpersonal relationships, either a group therapy setting or a 12-step setting. And I think we're kind of fooling ourselves to think that secretly revealing a secret is anything more than voyeurism. And it seems sort of the direction of the culture that somehow these electronic communications can take replace interpersonal communication.
Brian, thanks. Sherry, this is kind of up your alley. What are you saying?
Yeah, I have to agree. The question for me on all of these sites is what happens next? Because just getting it out, just kind of evacuating the secret can be a first step towards on a journey I love the way Frank put that. Or it can be kind of, I've done it. It's out there. Now it's up to somebody else to respond to me. I interviewed someone who actually responded to a post secret. The post secret in a very positive way, but in her therapy, she read the secret that said that had a beautiful model, and the secret said the media are holding up impossible standards. In order to look like this, like the model, mm-hmm. I would have to have my foot amputated. I would cut it off in a second. If in order to look like the model, I would have to have my foot amputated. I would cut it off in a second.
And you had a patient responding
to this secret.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And that response was?
That response was, that's me. And it opened up a conversation. It didn't. She had somebody there to then say, you know, let's talk about what, you know, how the models make me feel. Let's talk about how the media, you know, airbrushing everybody makes me feel, Adobe shopping, Photoshopping everybody makes me feel. I also would cut off my foot to be 15 pounds thinner.
And if you weren't there for her to share that with, would she just be thinking about cutting off the
foot?
Well,
I think that's my point. And what I share with this last caller is what matters is what is your real community? Who can you really talk to about what these things evoke?
Here's a comment from the website, onpointradio.org. Sam says, I find that my friends do not post secrets in the sense that they write about things that they were hiding from the public. But my female friends in particular do post what could be considered emotional secrets in that they are much more willing to share intense emotion than they would be in person. Frank, do you think it makes people more willing to share because they get in the habit of it, or less because they don't have to share face-to-face? They can share anonymously online.
Well, anonymity, especially the way it works on the web, is very powerful. And as we've talked about a little bit earlier, it cuts both ways. And I think that I get most of my secrets from young people, probably from young women. And even though I don't claim that post-secret is trying to replace anything or even act as therapy, I do think it can be very positive for a person to struggle to understand a part of themselves that's confusing and find the words to express it in terms of a secret. I have a postcard here that I'd like to read that says,
please.
What you did to me when I was 16 was wrong. I never felt so alone in my life. I never felt so much pain. Today I'm strong because of you. Thank you. And I share this secret every time I talk about post-secret at college campuses. And what I say about it is I hope that in the process of that person sharing the secret, they were able to understand a part of their history, a part of their past, in a way that didn't have them being victimized, but empowered them, and hopefully in a way that grows from it and allows them to help others who might have gone through something similar.
Wow. Really powerful stuff on here. Sometimes just a message in a bottle. Here's one on the corner of a death certificate from Post Secret. I never kissed my son after he was born because he was sick and I was scared. He died 2 hours later. And here's another, talk about a message in a bottle. Dear birth mother, I have great parents. I've found love. I'm happy. I guess someone's hoping, someone else in particular, will read that. Frank Warren, founder and curator of Post Secret. Please stick with us. Sherry Turkle is with us, author of Simulation and Its Discontents. When we come back, we'll have the site moderator for FMyLife.com, kind of parade of woes that can be illuminating. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Popular site right now called F My Life. We got the site moderator with us right now from Montpellier in France. Alan Holding is here. It's a site that where people just put up sort of terribly funny failures that they've just been in the midst of. I've got a few in front of me right here. Let's see, what have I got? Today I had to tell a girl I like she couldn't sleep over because I live with my parents. I'm 24. Oh. Or, today I had a meeting at work with my board of directors for a potential promotion. When one of them told the joke, I politely let out an amused snort. Then I noticed my director's white shirt and tie covered in red splatter. I had nose bled all over the director of my company. Alan Holding is site moderator for FMyLife.com. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You're in France because this started in France with a site essentially called My Crappy Life, and now you've got it in the U.S. What's the gist? What's working here? Why do you think this is so popular, Alan?
I'm not sure. I think it's a lot to do with people's want to express their crappy days, and other people's want to laugh at what's happened to other people and sort of empathize with what's happened to other people, because everybody can recognize that can happen to them. And sometimes in the comments section we get on the website, we do get some comments where people say, oh, that happened to me the other day, and it's sort of like a group, I wouldn't say therapy, but it's something along the lines. But it's got to be, it all remains humorous. It's not as dark as Post Secret.
What gets the biggest laughs or the most attention? I mean, what are the kind of failures that people take some solace in sharing, but also that others just recognize and get that big human laugh out of, Alan?
Well, I think it's the more mundane stories which have a little twist to them. Not necessarily mundane as in boring, because we do moderate a lot of the stories because we get a load of submissions every day.
Uh-huh.
But anything which could happen to anyone will get the biggest laugh. I mean, we don't go for the most outrageous stories, because most of them, when they're really outrageous, you can imagine they're made up, they're fake. So some of the stories, you can see it happening to yourself. So that's the really interesting stories.
I mean, some are really, mundane. I opened my laptop and found a huge crack in the bottom half of the screen. Now it's just an expensive iPod charger. Okay. Some get really down and dirty. You may screen, but you don't screen too tightly. There's some stuff I can't even read here. And then today, the girl I'm in love with invited me to stay with her in Europe for 2 weeks. She's even paying for the flights and accommodation. It's because I'm such a special friend to her, and she wants me to come up to meet her fiancé before she gets married. Ouch! Mm. Ouch!
Yeah, some of them are pretty harsh, yeah. And, yeah, as you say, some of them you couldn't read over the air, but the idea is to have a wider range of stories as possible. I mean, we couldn't have the same story repeated over and over, and we do get a lot of submissions per day. So we're quite pleased to get so many stories, and we don't publish all of them, obviously. I'm not just the only moderator. There's quite a few of us.
Yeah. So let's get a little conversation here between Post Secret and F My Life. Frank, you must have watched Alan's site sort of charge into popularity in the U.S. It's got a different focus from your own. What do you make of it, Frank Warren?
Well, my daughter told me first about it, and she likes going there. And
mine,
I think,
too.
Alan puts his finger on something. The real range of secrets that people are sharing, I think, makes these confessions even more extraordinary. I've got one here in front of me that says, every time I work up the nerve to swallow the pills, someone does something to make me want to live. And I've never said thank you for saving my life. People have no idea how far kindness can go. I'm living proof. And then right next to that one, I have this other one that I brought in that simply says, I've had sex dreams about the people on the radio. I thought you might like that, Tom.
Okay. I wonder how you all screen these. Here, we're getting some at our own website with you guys on. And here's one from Helmut. He says, to curtail my wife's spending habits, I told her that we lost everything in the Wall Street crash and are in danger of foreclosure. I faked depression, I guess emotional depression, even saw a doctor. It worked so well that her parents gifted us $130,000 for the supposed purpose of saving our home. In fact, my nest egg from the dot-com days is still worth over $1.5 million. And his wife doesn't know. I mean, it's just an extraordinary circumstance. Here's one from Anne. It just came to us. Says, I've always wanted to be able to share that the real reason I divorced my husband is that I discovered he was a porn-addicted cross-dresser. My children don't know, neither does anyone else. Okay, Alan, if you look at that one, does it sound? Will you put it up? Will you wonder, is it true, or just put up for outrage? No disrespect, Anne. Maybe it's straight-up truth, but here we are. Who knows?
I think the first one would be more appropriate for the website. I thought that was very good. Sometimes we try and avoid touchy subjects, like It's got, the whole idea has got to remain funny. That's well, as funny as possible. We can't go as dark as Post Secret, which is not completely different, but it's supposed to entertain people, make them laugh, and as much as possible, and make sort of a community out of it. As we've got people posting from all over the world, it's quite amazing sometimes to see people posting a story from, I don't know, Canada, say, and someone from India in the comments section saying that happened to me, and we don't really know what makes a good story, but we recognize it straight away.
Sherry, what do you make of the range here? Although on the one hand, we've got really harsh or deep, sad stuff. I wish my mother would have had an abortion and saved me from the suffering. On the other, you have F My Life with, you know, much smaller tragedies that really are the stuff of human comedy.
Well, the what's extraordinary about F My Life is that yesterday, reading it, you have a sexual abuse story right next to spilling the paint all over his best suit. And I think what's interesting about this site is the danger or the vulnerability that somehow these things become leveled as a kind of entertainment. You know, Shakespeare has this great line, mm-hmm. we're consumed with that which we were nourished by. That I know people who spend, you know, 5-6 hours a day reading sites like this, reading Facebook confessionals, reading Twitter confessionals, where this being a consumer, I mean, we haven't spoken much about the consumers. Mm-hmm. We've spoken more about
those who are reading, just watching.
But really the consumers of these sites. Some of it is in a spirit of empathy for the human condition, mm-hmm. and understanding better our commonalities. But some of it becomes, as you know, a kind of entertainment that can become consuming in a way that I'm not sure is good. What else would these people be doing if they weren't reading these sites?
5 or 6 hours a day. I mean, that's
yes.
amazing. But on the other hand, you raise Shakespeare. Draw the distinction between, you know, so much of literature is about revelation,
yes.
about telling the untellable. Shakespeare included, he gets into all kinds of, you know, plus he has humor. So what's the difference between reading these? These are human secrets. They happen to be real or something close to it. What's the difference between this and, I don't know, the revelations in literature?
I think the literature is written, well, the good news is that some of these serve as the revelations in literature, where you kind of use it to self-reflect in the most constructive way.
Or recognize the universality of everything, perversity and tragedy and comedy.
But in some ways, I think that we come to technology hoping to be nourished by it.
Mm-hmm.
And in some sense, when we're spending larger and larger amounts of time not with the people in our lives but immersed in our screens in this way, perhaps it's eating us up in the sense that I was...
With leveling. Frank, what about it? A leveling where, you know, something sort of slight and funny and something profoundly deep or even tragic are show up in the same... screen, not necessarily even the same site, but you know how easy it is to go from your site to Alan's.
Well, I don't think of what's available online as being an either-or proposition. Either you're on the web interacting or you're with your friends or family talking about things. I think there's a place for it all. And I think of Post Secret as a new kind of storytelling, a storytelling that allows us to recognize that we all have secrets. And if we think we have a burden that's heavier than somebody else and we see a larger burden, it might make us feel not just more connected, but as though our secrets shouldn't weigh us down as much as we're allowing them to.
Here's one. My best friend is cheating on her emotionally abusive husband. I know it's wrong, but it's the first time I've seen her happy in years, from a secret tweet. Bill, you're on the air from New Haven, Connecticut. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi, thank you. I am a playwright, unfortunately not yet produced, and this is not a... This is not self-aggrandizement here, but I...
A playwright, great.
Mm-hmm. The major themes of my playwrights is the twofold principle that I live by. One is, there are things in my life that are private, and I don't have to share those with other people, and there are secrets, and one should never keep secrets from oneself, and or one should never, what I say, lie to oneself. So the substance of my work, and this dovetails with the online concept, is that I write stories about people
whose secrets about themselves get revealed one way or another. And I think your posting your website thing really hits to that particular theme. Don't lie to yourself. You can lie to others if it's appropriate, if it's necessary, you know, and keep things private. What I'm doing, sitting right here, where I am right now, is private. I don't have to share that with you. But I mustn't ever tell lies to myself or keep secrets.
Bill, let me ask you, you're a playwright. Do you see these websites as competition? After all, they're putting up thousands of little human dramas all the time. It's something that playwrights used to have more lock on than they have now.
I just, because I'm listening to this program, I have about four or five notes about these things and how you make that into a dramatic scene. It's really exciting.
You better get going, because they're hot. They're hot on your trail. They're competition. But thank you for calling, Bill. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sherry?
I just had a comment about the Frank's talking about the internet and the physical world not being either or. I couldn't agree with him more. I think that there starts to be, however, in the 24 hours a day, a kind of opportunity cost, though, that we have to face about the seductiveness of not having to take risks in the real, of doing your sharing by reading things online, by Facebook stalking, by, you know, looking for people's secrets, by checking out Facebook all day. People do this because it's harder. It just is harder
to do it in the flesh. So it's a faux connectedness.
Well, I don't want to say faux, but it's a genre of connectedness that does keep, in practice, people from doing some other things in the real that might be more productive.
Let's go to Abby in Scituate, Massachusetts. Abby, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I volunteer for a crisis and suicide hotline, and I wanted to comment on secrets that are told in real time by voice. I've heard both shocking and tragic stories, and I think that sharing this way is more helpful than in print online.
So do you see this as are you afraid people won't call in and get the voice connection that you provide, the live human connection? Or do you see this as a good step toward calling you, a distraction?
I think that it's better for people to call because it's just a little bit closer to that real-world connection.
Yeah, and you can do something about it. You can refer people somewhere, I guess.
We can refer people, but they also hear, we're not judgmental, and they hear in the human voice, my voice for instance, they hear an affirmation of their pain or their confusion or whatever reason they're calling.
Now, I'm sure hotline staffers must look at this with real interest and wonder, you know, is it taking people who might have called us, but maybe it leads people to you? Let me get one more call. Laura in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air, Laura.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
I just had one comment for you guys. I am a senior at the College of Charleston, and one of my creative writing professors always quotes from Montaigne, who's a French writer. He said that every man within him has the entire human condition. Yes. And I think that this is a perfect example of that quote. When people read these secrets and these experiences, even if they haven't experienced it themselves, they understand the emotion from that. And I think what's interesting is that there's this online community being built despite the fact that people don't know one another superficially, as in they haven't met each other physically, and there's a sort of anonymity, or there's definitely an anonymity, and yet there's a unity together through these secrets. And I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that.
It's a great observation and a great quote from Montaigne. Every man has within him the entire human condition. I guess that's what makes us relate to everything at these sites, whether it's the humorous failures at Alan Holding's F My Life or certainly Frank Warren's. Frank, what about it? You can hear throughout Sherry's admiration and yet her reservation. Here's Laura saying maybe you're building a new kind of different kind of community of understanding. Do you worry that it's online? We just got a minute here, but do you worry that as being a self-limiting aspect, or somehow could it change a whole mentality, a whole global community?
Well, I think the web is making the realities of geography less important, and it's reestablishing or reforming our relationships with strangers, with people we haven't met before. And One of the things that really brought this home for me was when I received a postcard from a stranger describing the most humiliating experience of his childhood. And before I even finished reading it, I recognized in my own past something very similar that had happened to me. And so what I did is I took out my own postcard, I wrote my secret on it, I mailed it. In my case, it came right back to me. But I was able to share that with my wife and my daughter, and it's in the first post-secret book.
Well, it's quite a story already, and it's rolling on, maybe sharing the way we think about ourselves and each other. Frank Warren, founder and curator of Post Secret, it's been great having you today. Thank you so much for joining us, Frank.
Thank you, Tom.
And Alan Holding in Montpellier, France, site moderator for fmylife.com. It is fantastically humorous. I've gotten a lot of great laughs. Alan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sherry Turkle, it's always great to have your wisdom right here. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.